This is a Pinball News production.
We're now with James Laughlin and Jimmy Litham.
Sure.
Who are going to tell us all about Python's Pinball Circus. So I'm actually going to hand over to you, James, so you can tell us how this project got started.
It got started in 1991 with Python Angelo introducing to Williams a concept of a pinball game in a vertical cabinet. It wasn't at that time they were working on a game called Animals, and they were looking at doing a novelty game, which Python was going to be in charge of. Python was trying to push a project with a vertical cabinet, so he designed this cabinet, laid it out, and they actually patented the vertical cabinet. Then, as Python was working on the novelty game, he apparently slipped the Pinball Circus into the novelty game. Williams had already designated a model number for it, which was 60020. Pinball machines were 500 and then the two digits. Novelty games were 600s. That's why even today they still designated it as 60020. So Python continued to work on the game, and they developed it to the point where they built two sample games. They put them out on test location. At that time, the BOM was approximately $300 more than a standard pinball game. They put it out on test, and reportedly the test compared to a standard pinball game at the time, I couldn't tell you which one, but it did not do as well as that comparator. And I don't know where the test was done. It reportedly, one guy said that it was in an arcade in New York somewhere. Don't know. So Williams they didn't put a lot of code into that game. As a matter of fact, the game, has anybody been to Las Vegas and played the Pinball Circus out there? You know it plays like a dog. It plays like a novelty game. You start out the lower play field, you work your way up to the flippy play field, you knock the teeth down, ball goes there, guess what? You're done with that game. What do you do then? You start over with. At that point, if it was a novelty game, you'd probably get three or four tickets and go up there and exchange them for bubble gum. So they didn't do it justice to develop a code for it to play like a pinball machine. They took out a couple of the features that Python wanted in there, because at that time Python was sort of in a contract dispute with Williams, and it primarily stemmed from he was about to leave, or did eventually leave, to go to Capcom, if some of you know the history of Python. How many here actually know of Python Angelo? Is that, oh, good. So I'm not talking about somebody who's like, who the heck is Python? What kind of, is he talking about his private parts? What? No, Python Angelo. So for whatever reason, it was a business decision overall. Williams pulled the plug on Pinball Circus with just two sample games made. Today, one is in Las Vegas. The other is in the basement at Ken Fidesna's house, who was an executive at Williams. I think he made it to VP, president. Where was he?
He was just at the top. He was at the general manager.
Whatever the top is at Williams in those days. So fast forward in 2012 at the Chicago Expo, Python announced to the seminar at his seminar there that he was going to do Pinball Circus again. If I went and told you the backstory of how I got involved with it, this seminar would take 2 hours. So I'm just going to fast forward. Python announced he was going to do it. I had some of the original drawings, engineer drawings, plus I had the original tooling to do the ramps for the plastic ramps on the game. So I approached Python afterwards and told him what I had, and he was elated. And he goes, oh, I'm going to put you on the team. I'm going to put you on a team. And I'm thinking, I'm going to be part of a team. Well, it turned out that ultimately I was the head of the team, and the team was Paul Kiefert, myself, and George, who is also here. If you've been by the booth, he's the one that sort of looks like he hasn't had any sleep in 3 days. But He has had sleep in the last 2 days. So that's how we got involved into the project. Paul and I sort of spearheaded it through Python. I could go into the whole...
I want to know who your friend is.
Oh, well, this is Animal, as everybody... Does everybody know Animal, Muppets? Well, this is... Go ahead, Animal. Yeah, I told you, if you got him drunk last night, he wouldn't talk tonight. Animal was Python's animal, and there's another backstory to that literally a backstory if you think about it. We can't reveal that, can we? We don't have a slideshow here. Anyway, this was Python's animal. He went around with him to shows. And when he passed away, this was basically the only thing that he, not basically the only thing he gave me. He gave me this to be in charge of, and there's also history of how I actually got possession of him, but he's now going to shows that the Pinball Circus goes to. But fast forward with Jimmy so that I don't hog the whole thing. Jimmy came into it. Basically, I'm the hardware side of it at this point. Jimmy is more or less the software side of it. So we just constantly argue at this point. That's the way it's going to be
an old married couple.
Here on out.
Yep. Can we throw it open to questions?
Any questions to this point on it? We can ramble on about other stuff, continue on. If you got any questions as to how I'm getting you to this point of the story, any? Good. We can ramble.
All right.
You want to
throw one out there? Well, you've told us how you came to be doing the project, and you've got the prototype that you've built out on the floor.
Right.
Tell us about that prototype, and I guess the next question will be, and where do you go from here?
I'll start. You finish. Isn't that how we do the songs?
Sure.
The game that's out there is the game that we are building that basically copies the game that Williams did. The only exception to it is that the snake that is in, well, there's two exceptions that he pointed out that I didn't even know about. The snake that Python wanted in there originally, which Williams removed, Python insisted that no matter what, that snake is to stay in the game. So we installed that again, which meant we had to take the flippers where Williams had moved the left flipper down. We moved it back up to its original place and installed the snake. If you see pictures or if you see the game in Las Vegas, you'll note that there's two seals on the bottom of that playfield in the flipper area. And if you look at the whole game, the flippers represent a part of the anatomy of the animal corresponding to that playfield. And on the main playfield, the flippers represent the flippers of the seals. If you look at the game in Las Vegas, you'll notice that the seal to the left doesn't have the flipper as its flipper. The flipper has been moved down, and there's a makeshift wood insert that covers up the hole that would have been the snake mechanism. We installed it back in, moved the flipper back into the appropriate place. We don't have the graphics on the playfield, but that's where the seals will be. As far as that machine... The rest of it, with the exception of apparently the one, I didn't remember this, but Gary pointed this out. I was doing the talk in Seattle, and I'm talking about the seven flippers on the game, and he pointed out apparently, I don't remember this, but he won the bet because of a photo. Thank you. They took out one of the flippers on the main playfield. They only have two, where we installed the original third one on there. And that, it really makes a difference because it does bring a little bit of the left side of the play field in play, which that game even now lacks a left-hand side of the game in play. So that game, we're going to mimic the original. Then we're building a second white wood, which is going to incorporate the changes that Python wanted to test into the game. And from there, we're going to test them, figure out if they improve the play. If they don't, he told us, leave them in or take them out, whatever it takes. And then he also left us with the liberty to do what we felt was needed. His last basic demand on it was is that we make it the greatest pinball show on earth, which, yeah, thanks for that challenge. So.
Absolutely.
But
absolutely.
Jimmy, of course, he's got some ideas for the software side of it, also the board sets that we're using. Right now, this one has the Ben Heck system, if anybody's familiar with it. Jimmy, you're more familiar with that.
Right. We were presented with some unique challenges in the design of this game. It's got 7 flippers on it. And if you ever notice that whenever you flip 7 flippers at a time, there's quite a bit of current draw in there. And on some systems, it can just drive the entire control system completely insane. So we had some fairly unique hardware challenges there. We're testing the Ben Heck board. We're doing due diligence on all sorts of control systems, and our friends at Multimorphic have been very helpful also with helping us on test prototype number 2, so we can figure out what the best solution is and go forward there. From a software side, I mean the game originally was pitched as a novelty game, and actually if you look at the shot layout. Compared to other games, I mean, even if you set it next to much simpler layouts, I mean, there's a lot of shots there. There's a lot of flow there. After you make some shots from that left flipper and the ball goes whizzing around that left orbit and, comes screaming through the pop bumpers, that's a fun shot. And, it's not meant to, it's not meant for there only to be 2 of these games on Earth, right? There are so many people that can enjoy this game, pinheads and, just the general public, if that. I mean, whenever we were looking at pictures of the game, trying to gather as much information before James and Paul ventured out to Vegas, I mean, you would see pictures on people's blogs of like, hey, we were in Vegas and we stopped by this pinball museum, and they would take pictures of this game because even to the general public, it's this massive, Rube Goldberg pinball, show with crazy wire forms and the ball goes screaming all over the place. So that's a unique challenge in and of its own right from a software standpoint to incorporate all of this architecture. We've got a lot of ideas that we're throwing around to make it appealing as a pinball game and making that fun, not just flip the ball around, see if you can get to the top and win 3 tickets type deal. So it's unique from that standpoint, but I'm along for the ride, so it's a lot of fun.
How did you get on the bus? When did you join the team?
James,
yeah, when did you?
I don't even know.
Sure.
I probably started shipping code before I really knew I was shipping code. For that game, James called Paul. Paul called me and said, "Hey, we've got this crazy thing that we're doing." And I met Python actually for the first time at Al Warner's house. He was very nice enough to open up his home to pinheads, in the Atlanta area and beyond. And I didn't even know actually that Python was going to be there. And I figured we were just going to gather around and play some pinball. And I walk in, and I think as soon as I walk in, like, Python has just got the whole place just covered in food. I mean, he's cooking just everything, kicking everybody out of the kitchen. Nobody's lifting a finger. Python's cooking, deer and lamb and just everything under the sun. And, all of a sudden, I mean, I walk up to him and I say, hey, I really enjoyed Cyclone. It took a lot of my money as a kid, and I really enjoyed playing that at the local drive-in. And, he looked at me and said, oh, have you seen Circus? And I said, no. And he's like, oh, well, you gotta see that. If you thought Cyclone was a pinball, like, look at Circus. And, after I saw it, it was just insane. I looked at it and I said, this is a really, 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 fun looking game. And fast forward a couple of years and, they found out that I'd done a couple of software projects and done some redemption pinball code for some other companies, and that's whenever Paul reached out to me. He said, "Hey, James Laughlin." I was like, "Oh yeah, it's the Pinball Inc. guy that ignored my email for ramp requests for roller games." And then, now that I know what the pinball industry is like, I'm like, "Yeah, I would have been the only one that you ever ran that ramp for." It's like Raven, like who would ever request ramps for that? So I know, but so it was a lot of fun, and. I got to meet James, and I got to know Paul because we both worked in software, and we'd done some lunches together. And he said, "Hey, we're gonna do Circus." And at that time, y'all were probably traveling up to Chicago twice a month at least, and meeting with Python. And he said, "We're building a team, and we'd like you to be a part of it." And I obviously could not say yes quickly enough. So.
Okay. Yeah. So, that's the story of. Prototype number 1.
Somewhat, yeah.
What will we see different in prototype number 2?
As I was stating, we're going to incorporate or test the additional features that Python wanted. One of those is going to be a interactive display with the pinball itself. We're going to take the wire form that comes off of the elephant that now just basically does an angled feed to the draft play field, some call it ring number 3, and drops it off. We're going to take that wire form and wrap it around directly beneath the display, and we'll have interactive videos with the actual ball, which we're going to incorporate a bidirectional interaction with it as well. So it'll drop onto another mechanism that will allow the ball to go forward and backwards as you interact. So he can create circus acts within the game using the actual pinball and the display itself.
Yeah. You're going to have fun with that.
Thanks a bunch. Yeah, we're going to be incorporating more dots and sort of tie the gameplay together. Right now what you see is a mechanical prototype, and the code that's on there is almost, you know, I guess would almost parallel the code that you're seeing in Vegas, for those of you who have actually played the game. The only thing it's designed to do is really complete the ball path, so where you can actually get the ball up to all the areas of the play field. And we use that, of course, in test. So prototype number 2 is going to have more of the gameplay elements, you know, put in there. We're going to have, you know, some modes that can actually be completed, showing some of the ideas. You know, we're going to actually, put the screwdriver assembly that allows the ball to interact with the display. And incorporate some of those mechanical concepts in prototype number 2. We're also going to be testing a new electrical system. Actually, it's funny because I was standing next to somebody as they were playing the game, and they didn't have any idea who I was, which is great. And because they said, "Oh, this is a game that would not do well for an operator. You know, it's a servicing nightmare." So I said, "Well, we've got some plans for that." And with the technology we have now, I mean, you know, we're going to build games for, you know, whoever wants one, really. You know, I mean, that's the whole deal. People ask, "Oh, how many are you going to sell? How many are you going to sell?" It's like, well, you know, if you want one, you they'll be there. But the other part is, we're focusing as well on life for the collector and of course, the life for somebody who would have to route this thing. Because we've seen the response that the general public has toward the machine, and it's overwhelmingly positive. So we think it would do well, but we've got to hit the serviceability aspects of it. And, you know, so obviously, you know, we're going to be focusing on, you know, the ease of connecting, disconnecting the upper play fields, you know, with respect to how we evaluate the electrical system and how, you know, we proceed going forward. And those are some of the things that you're going to actually start seeing on prototype number 2, a little bit more fleshed out, a little more refined.
Okay. So normally in pinball design and manufacture, they have one guy doing software, one guy doing sound, one guy doing dots, someone maybe doing rules, and a couple of other people, not quite sure what they do, but quite a large team. So who's going to be working with you on doing all those other features?
You got this guy right here.
Pretty much. He runs the joint.
He's going to be dots, he's sound, pretty much all the other jobs that you mentioned right here.
Yeah. He did some of the stuff for, like, Attack from Mars.
Okay. Right. Yeah. So right now on your prototype, the snake head is kind of purely decorative. It doesn't do a lot. It moves up and down when you start the game.
Again,
so
the game that we have out there is nothing more than a flipping device. It is not, if you look at it, when you hit switches, they don't even score. We just have it set up. It is a comparator, a play comparator to the second one. The second one is going to be the one that is going to be used to development. Thank you. It's going to be the development game that we're going to use. That's the one that's going to be the cool game, because it's going to constantly change. And another feature that we're looking at, going back to that, is a multi-ball feature on that game, which looking at the way the game is laid out, I think that's going to add an incredible challenge to it, because obviously you're going to have to get a ball up to that top play field. You're going to have to keep two balls in play, probably a two-ball multi-ball. The game's not big enough for much more than that, unless we figure out it does. But you're going to have to keep one ball in play while you get that last one up to the top. So it's going to really challenge, I think, the best players. But it's not going to be so much that the players like myself can not enjoy it.
Right.
But that's another one of the features that we're going to throw into that.
My question was leading up to this, back to the snake.
I cut you off, didn't I?
Is how's the player going to control the snake ultimately?
Take it, Jimmy.
Actually, it's I don't know. You got a patent on that? It's going to be a pelvic switch.
A what switch?
A pelvic switch.
Okay.
You're going to thrust
that sounds like an operation.
The machine Surgeons to control your snake.
Yeah. Well, it's better than the sphincter switch, which we thought.
Right.
About
we that one failed in test.
It really did.
Yeah. We lost some employees over that one.
It just didn't smell right. I'm telling you.
Yeah. It was.
No. Python wanted a pelvic button in there originally, and I found definitive proof that they were looking at a pedal in the cabinet to actuate the snake. I think most pinball players will agree, you don't want to stand there with your foot shoved up the middle of a cabinet while you're trying to play a game. We all have our natural position to play pinball. I don't want to take somebody out of their natural position to play pinball. And so the foot pedal's not going to be in play. Python wanted the pelvic button that you will thrust the button. You're going to thrust it. You're going to be part of that machine. Yes, you're going
to
be.
We've added extra weight toward the front to make sure you don't kick the machine back.
But
you
know, it will be an option. We'll have the family-friendly game that will have a separate button on the flipper on the side that you can actuate the snake with. But the feedback we're getting so far is 99.99% pelvic button.
Yeah, with some Purex on the side. So, yeah, it'll be great.
So can you say something about the size of the main play field compared to a conventional pinball machine?
You got that?
I'm
going to throw stuff at you.
Sure. The conventional play field is a little bit wider, but it's only about half the size lengthwise, though, of a conventional.
The actual play field in that game, the way it's set up now with the vertical play field in it, it cuts the main play field out. We could take that cabinet, and the actual play field is only 4 inches shorter than a standard play field. We could actually lengthen it by two. So we could put a play field in that cabinet, and that goes back to what Python wanted to do. He wanted to give designers something they haven't been able to work with ever in a pinball game. Some people say Bonsai Run, but that's debatable. That a third dimension. All these designers have been working in a two-dimensional world. Now you have a vertical dimension to play in, and that's what his actual idea was. It wasn't trying to sell Pinball Circus to the company. He wanted to sell that platform to the company. And the possibilities going forward with that vertical dimension are not endless, but they're magnificent. The possibilities are great, and we're not going to have to cut the play field. We're only going to lose maybe 2 inches. We can't make the cabinet any deeper because we're at the 4 foot limit of a piece of plywood, so we can't make that any deeper. And to stretch on that, the footprint of that cabinet is actually less than a standard pinball machine because you don't have the width of the head taking or putting any part of that footprint in there. The depth of it is actually a little bit shorter. The width of it, the play field, the total width of the play field is, I think on this one, maybe half an inch to an inch narrower than a standard one. I believe. I actually hadn't measured that.
It's probably close to the wide body, I think, actually.
Is it the wider?
Yeah, I think.
I'll have to redo
it. It's pretty close.
I just
to
built
wide
the
body
cabinet. I didn't build
we have no idea.
We clueless.
Okay, so you've got your first prototype, which is kind of proof of concept. Then your second prototype is how you can take it further to the complete design. Mm-hmm. Then after that, what happens?
After that, we make 12 sample games. And those sample games are the precursor to a production run. Sample games do two things. First, the sample games we hope will help fund a production run. Second, it'll allow us to put the full game together, put the code into it, and test the games. We have two commercial locations that want to take it and test it, so we can do the physical test on it. plus the others will go to people that we've got 7 of the 12 already committed, so to speak. Not that nobody's put any money into it except for us, and that's the way it will remain, we hope, right?
Right.
No. Now, we're not doing the pre-order thing. We're not taking any money. We haven't from the very beginning. We won't. I think a lot of people here are probably familiar with some recent debacles, and we, over a year ago, we knew that we weren't going to get into that because two things, or maybe more than two things. One, we're working at our schedule. You start taking deposits and pre-orders. Now you've got a schedule that you've got to meet. You've got to tell people when they're going to get a return on that investment or get their machine. And second, that's what they're doing. They're investing in your company, and that just goes against everything I've ever done. When I did the ramp business, anybody familiar with what I was doing in a previous life? Raise your hand. Yeah, I was making the plastic ramps for pinball machines. Never did I take a pre-order. I made the product. I felt confident the product would sell. I took the financial risk because I was the one that was going to get the financial gain if it was successful. It's not you, the customer, that should take that financial risk because you're not going to gain anything other than what you paid for. I'm the one that should take that risk. We should take that risk because we're the ones that are going to be rewarded if the product that we have confidence in is successful. So we're going to build the company on our own merit. And what was the other part of that?
So we got to the point where you've got 12 sample games.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
which you're going to sell.
Yeah, we'll sell off. We've got to come up with a way. The line of people that have told us they want one of those 12, the math doesn't work at this point severely. So we've got to come up with a way to sort of get those out there. The 7 that we have committed are people that have really helped us with the project, including the team members, Paul, myself.
Right.
Did we offer you one yet?
I don't know.
And Animals getting one.
Yeah.
So 7 of them are pretty much tightly committed.
Yeah.
And then the other 5 are going to go out to however we can come up with a fair way to do it. There isn't going to be a fair way, but whatever way we can sort up. But once we get past that, then we look at that's when we're going to decide if we can go into production, if it's feasible, because at that point we will know how much it costs. We've had the question, and I'm sure a lot of you might be curious, what's your estimated cost of this game going to be? How much are you going to sell them for? We have no clue at this point because we can't compare the BOM to this to any game out there. It's not like any of those games. So we've got to get into those 12 sample games so that we can develop a bill of materials so that we can decide how much they're going to have to sell for. Let's face it, if it's too far north of, if we're getting into 5 digits, it's a very, very small market, and it's not going to be worth it. So we got to make that decision at that time. Ideally, and this is not a commitment, and this is not what we're trying to, we would like to, and we're striving to see if we can get into the 7 to 8 range. I think that's the happy place in the pinball market today. If we can get in there, we're directly competing with everybody else, and I feel strongly that the product that we're going to be competing with is a premium product, you know, the best that's going to be out there.
Sounds like a lot of machine for your money if that's your price point.
Yeah, it's going to be, but it's going to be a challenge to get there. It doesn't look like much, and anybody here that wants to build one, please come on down. We'll let you build your own. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun.
So I know it's only kind of not even a ballpark price. It's just a shot in the dark, really.
You're
talking about production games now, not a price on prototypes.
No, the 12 sample games are going to be a premium, obviously, because
very limited.
They are the first 12, and they may be the only 12. If we get there and we just don't see that production is in the future, they will be the only 12. We'll move on, hopefully be able to move on to something else. But I don't want to sound negative. I feel the odds are that it's going to have a strong enough demand that we can go into production with it.
Right. So you mentioned that Python saw this concept as a platform, not just for one game, but for other games. If you make it through to designing other games, or manufacturing other games, where the design is going to come from?
Primarily, we're going to have input to it, but we've been talking to and started actually working, not working in a true work relationship, but we've been talking to some of the original engineers that worked, designers that worked for Williams.
So you're talking about established designers?
Yeah, established designers, whether they are in the full primary role or if they're in a consulting role. We're not going to do it ourselves. I'm not a pinball designer. I'm pretty good, I feel, at doing things that I see need to be done and how they could be done and be done better. But as far as laying out a play field, I'm not going to try to fool myself or anybody else that I could do that. I could help in doing it, but that would be it. And he's probably got a little bit better skill set than I to do something like that.
We'll see.
Okay. Do you want to say anything about time scales?
No.
Okay.
Now,
moving on.
Now, again, given a timeline, it's sort of like trying to give the price point at this time. We don't have one because, again, the wire forms on that game, if you look at them, we built those by hand, 100% by hand. Went out, bought a spot welder. And by the way, if you've never owned a spot welder, get one. Those are fun as all get out. You can put you can stick stuff together. I didn't think it could get stuck together. I got to figure out how to get those two dogs apart now. You know? So we did that completely by hand. As a matter, other than the pop bumper assemblies, flipper mechs, the standard post and things like that. All the brackets, all the wire forms, everything else in that game has been handmade by us in our shop. And it's quite fun. What was the original question? I keep forgetting what you're asking.
I wasn't listening. I was too busy speaking.
Okay, good.
That's fine. That's Jim. Fine.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just been
the timeline. That's
right,
what you were
right.
Oh,
you know. We're making good on a promise, right? And that's first and foremost. There's a lot of heart in this game, every time that we, get to where we doubt ourselves or run into struggles, engineering problems, whatever. We listen to the videos and voicemails and stuff like that, and conversations that we had with Python, and where he's like, hey, y'all make this game. And quickly, we are thrown right back into the mix, and immediately, we return to the drawing table with our batteries are recharged and all that sort of thing. So, as I said, we're driven by heart, not really by the budget or checkbook at this point.
Or the calendar.
So
yeah,
no
or
budget.
The calendar.
No budget.
Well,
if
we were going to throw an estimate out there. Yeah. The hardware side of this game is probably 85% complete, and it'll be complete I'm putting a deadline on myself. It'll be complete most likely within the next 2 months. The second game will be started cabinet-wise. The hardware side of it, I don't want to say it is in front of a software guy, is the easy part. Oh, God, no, I said that.
We have a rivalry, yeah.
The software side of it is probably 70% of a game, at least. And so the development of that is constant. Plus, you have to debug. You have to go back and forth. I'm talking on your – you go ahead and talk.
No, absolutely. We're prepared to tackle the software side of it. I've done work in Redemption Pinball. I've done work in, I guess you would call it collector-type pinball. I did some work with, some games like Cactus Cannon Continued, did some other games, that you'll probably be seeing soon. And as such, we've had the ability to talk to these players and figure out what they expect, and they've all been very open. So the software side of it is going to be fun because we have to balance. It's a one-ball game. I mean, in terms of, there isn't a multi-ball in it. You look at games like Cyclone, and for their time, and that did only have one ball, and it's a balancing act to make it fun. So the software side of it is going to be a challenge, but a very, very big reward on, again, keeping this promise and, bringing this game. But, it's got to be fun.
Yeah,
it's going to be a challenge, but it's a great growth opportunity.
Okay. So in terms of milestones, I think you've already said that you plan to have the game at Pinball Expo, Chicago, October. From what you're saying, it's kind of implied that that will be prototype one that you'll be bringing.
Yeah, prototype one will be there. Prototype two, maybe. There again, it depends on how long it takes to do. Part of it is the software. Second is the second game. We're almost starting all over again. Since we built everything by hand here, we got to build everything by hand again. Plus, we're going to have to develop new mechanisms. So number two may or may not be in tow, but if it is, it's going to be very primitive. And that's we how many were here last year at this show? Last year we brought out one play field, a small play field that had the flippers on it and had a drop target assembly on it, and we announced that the game was going to get done. So within 1 year, we went from that little play field to what you see out there. So we feel like we've made... Thank you. We feel like we've made quite an accomplishment. Everybody that's been on the team is as proud as we can with ourselves, because literally when Python left us in April last year, we were really trying to struggle with, can we do this? Because if you look at something and you've never done it before and you see what a monumental task it is, we were overwhelmed and we literally were scared to death. We could not pull it off. And then we really got heavy into the project after the announcement here, and we started developing the play fields. And one thing, we just, one step at a time, one little thing at a time. Every day you got to go forward. And it was just before Expo that we looked at the project and said, we're going to do this. Wow, we can do this. And it's been going forward ever since. And it's what's great about it is the labor of love. It's a labor of a promise. And it's something that we're going to see it through. We've got to.
And every single time that we've run into issues, somebody in the pinball community has you know, yeah, reached out with open arms and managed to unwedge us. You know, I mean, sometimes, you know, Charlie was burning the midnight oil trying to get play fields out, you know, within a couple days, you know, or somebody lends in and says, hey, you know, I think I have these scans or something you can use, or, you know, here's some, you know, CAD drawings that you know, we'd come across. And I mean, every single time we have run into an issue, usually before a show, somebody has managed to, or a group of people have managed to just, you know, again, reach out to us and say, hey, we believe in what you're doing and we want to help you fulfill the promise, you know. And that's kind of, you know, that's where the project name came from, right? I mean, and that's what, you know, everybody's just jazzed to do, and that's why we're so humbled and thankful. Every single time, we look at, again, where we were last year and where we are now, and we know it's going to get done.
We're going to go forward every day, so yeah, it'll get done.
Yep. Okay, I guess we should acknowledge that all this stuff is the core, if you like. All this is taking place local to here, in Atlanta.
It is.
And the core team up to this point has been you two guys, and Paul. Mm-hmm. I know Al's been in there.
Yeah,
as well.
Al Warner, Paul Kieford, myself, Jimmy.
George, definitely.
Is George in here? No.
And then you kind of got an extended team, which you've already mentioned.
The Corgis.
The Corgis.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Charlie over at Spooky.
Charlie, Ben Heck
with the board set.
Yeah. Goodness gracious! Now I should have wrote down the list.
Who else?
Our network
there's
of
a hand,
vendors.
Oh, Steve Sabota. Anybody here know Steve Sabota in California? If you ever get the opportunity to meet the man, he is one of the most incredible people you'll ever meet. He was very pivotal, both from a support standpoint and supplying us with parts that we just could not find anywhere else. And so, Steve Sabota. Familiar with Matt Cristiano at Planetary Pinball. He's the actual money man and the guy that runs Planetary, or not runs it, but he's the, he's, I guess you call
one
it
one of the two partners,
yeah,
with Rick.
CFO, CEO, whatever it is. Anyway, Matt and myself, we really have worked well together to make sure that this game is going forward without any issues in the licensing side of it or the copyright side of it. So everything has come together, and it's not, no entity that we've tried to work with has ever, they've actually stepped forward to ask if they could help. It's not, well, you got to come see us to get this done. They've really, they put their hand out and extended their hand of help. So it's been very refreshing from that standpoint.
Can you say a bit about the artwork that's in the game? I mean, how you've sourced what you've got, and
oh,
how
now
you plan
I
go
back
forward.
To the backstory of 2009. Wow, how much time? Yeah, we still got a few minutes. 2009, Illinois Pinball sold to me the vast majority of their pinball parts and their engineer documentation, everything that they had gotten from Williams, and in that, there was a lot of engineered drawings, and I uncovered that there were engineered drawings for Circus. Now we're fast-forwarding back to what I said earlier, meeting with Python after he made the announcement. But there was, after the deal was made, Gene was getting foreclosed on the buildings that he was in, and the bank was aware of the transaction between Illinois Pinball and Pinball Inc. They rang me up when I was on holiday in Florida with a friend of mine, a dear friend of mine, Greg Berry from Australia, who sadly passed away this year. We were in Florida, and we got a phone call. I got a phone call from the bank saying that that Saturday night that they were going to be taking over the buildings, and anything in the buildings was going to be thrown away, hauled off. And this was on a Thursday. They said if I wanted to go up there and get the stuff out of there, then I had to do it by midnight Saturday night, which was Halloween, and very appropriately. So I turned to Greg, and Greg, being the person he was, just said, "Mate, you gotta go." So we turned around, drove back to Atlanta, booked the flight, got to Blooming Idiot Town, as I call it, Bloomington, Illinois. At noon on that Saturday, we had booked the flight going up at noon, had to come back. The only flight coming back was at 6 p.m. Greg had to get to the airport Sunday morning to go back to Australia, so we were in a very tight window. Went up there and rented a pickup truck, got over to the warehouse, started boxing stuff up and shipping it back to myself. We went to the post office with the boxes of documents. Then we went to FedEx with the long stuff, the tubes and stuff like that. And we, and this, a lot of this stuff was in a portion of the building that was raining more inside than outside when it rained. It was in really bad, a very bad environment. It all got shipped back. The rest of that story, I'll tell it. We finished up at approximately 5 o'clock. The flight was leaving at 6 o'clock. So we get over to the rental Avis, which was across the airport. They were closed. And so we had to drop the truck off, and no shuttle, anything to take us to the airport. This is a regional airport, so we had to run because at that time we were about 15 minutes from the flight leaving, not loading, leaving. And we had to run across this field that the night before it had rained. So we were running across a swamp. And I got to tell you, going through airport security, even in a small regional airport with mud up to your knees, and you have to remove your shoes, it's sort of payback. I'm telling you, it was good. Those guys looked at us, and it was It was good. So, we made it to the, they were shutting the doors. We got to the plane, got back to Atlanta. A few days later, the packages started arriving. Fast forward to Python in 2012, right? I keep forgetting that year for some reason. 2012, Python and I tell him about the engineer documents. He's calling me up after Expo, and he's excited. And I'm on the phone with him, and I tell him, Python, you know, when I brought all that stuff back, had it shipped back to myself, there were tubes, and there were black tubes that said Circus on them, and I always thought that they were Circus Voltaire tubes. I never looked in them. If you see the amount of stuff I have, you'll understand that I've got piles of this stuff, and he can attest. He's been there all week.
Vaults.
So I just never looked in those tubes. While I'm on the phone with Python, let me just look and see if there's something in there. I pull them open, and there in seven tubes were almost every original film for the artwork on that machine. And Python literally started crying because he just could not believe that that stuff was still in existence. It was thought that it was long gone. So that's how we came into the artwork. So the artwork you see on the cabinet is the original artwork from Williams, from the films that we scanned in, and George, he's not here, converted so that we could get them printed out. And Charlie from Spooky Pinball is the one that printed those out. So that's another piece of the puzzle of this game that, like many pieces, that have just fallen into our laps as we've gone along. The list of things that literally have fallen out of the sky into our laps on this is absolutely amazing. Even just the fact that I was at Python Seminar to hear him announce what he was wanting to do was in itself just a happenstance, because I was just going through the lobby at Expo, and I don't ever get to go to the seminars. This is the first one I went to at this show because I'm always manning the business, the booth. And I just ran into Python in the lobby, and he goes, "Hey, James, how are you? You're going to come see my speech tomorrow, right?" He's Romanian, by the way. If nobody's ever met him, he was Romanian. And I said, "Sure, Python, I'll come see it." And it was at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, and over at the booth, I looked down, it's past 10. I ran in there right as he was saying that. So just me being in there, knowing that he was going to do it, was, again, just one of those chances. That's the artwork.
So just to make it clear, because we haven't actually acknowledged it, not only is the game design and concept by Python, but the artwork is by Python.
Python and Pat McMahon, if you're not familiar, he's another artist that worked for Williams, and Python did, and art is not anywhere near, I can't even draw a smiley face, but a little bit of trivia, Python being the artist, he could not draw a circle. If you look at any of his artwork, every circle that he draws is done with a template. He always sketched circles. He could not draw a circle, but neither can I. I can't even, my circles look more like squares.
Okay. And just staying with the theme of things falling into place, it's a story, I'm not sure if you can tell it, but just be a nice one to close with, and that's the story of Pimbo and you needing the elephant to go on the play field. Can you tell that story of how you came by the elephant?
We're leaving you out of this, aren't we?
You're great. You're doing fine.
Pimbo, the elephant that is the mechanical elephant on the game, we were in Chicago at the Expo doing a talk, one of the sessions there, and we were lamenting to the audience that the body of the elephant, we could not find any original drawings, tooling, nothing. So we were going to have to completely recreate that. The next morning, we come to the booth at the Expo, and there's an elephant with a note on it. "I heard you needed this," and it was from Greg Ferris. And the reason that there's another story behind that, but how Greg and I got to be friends, but Greg left the elephant there, and it was just another one of the pieces. So we were able to take that. Oh, back to the team members. We left out John Ballow. John Ballow is the sculptor that worked for Williams dear friend of Python's. He worked for Williams going back 30 years. He did a lot of sculptures for them, and he is working with us now. So we took that elephant and brought it to John. He 3D scanned, or no, he didn't 3D scan that one. He actually made a mold of it, and what you see on this game, that white body, is from that mold. So then we gave the original back to Greg.
Well, we've got a couple of minutes left, so are there any more questions out there?
Okay. What's been your biggest challenge?
Money.
Are you looking for investors?
No, not yet. That. Multiplayer? Oh, yes. Yes, it'll be a multiplayer game. The code in this game over here, this game plays like a dog. If you go over there and play this game, if you last more than 30 seconds, you're playing a darn good game. Mm-hmm. If you get up to that upper play field, I don't want to play against you anywhere. It is a very challenging game. And to that, the other thing that we've looked at is I think we need to move the flippers in just a touch. It's not going to take much, but we've got to move the flippers in just a little bit because those things are brutal. But also, when you shoot the ball in this game right now, of course, the code is the ball comes back down. It doesn't care if you hit anything or not because most of the switches aren't even wired in yet. So you just lost ball one, ball two, and ball three. My score is zero.
Okay, I've got a question for Jimmy.
Yes,
the dot matrix display that you're using at the moment, do you think that's going to stay? Has there been consideration given to going color, LCD, whatever?
We have the option and the technology, but right now, we're replicating the original vision, and right now we're prototyping a DMD, and so far it's working out very well. Yes, we are surveying options of color, but it's nothing set in stone just
okay,
yet.
Okay, so the hardware will handle color. Mm-hmm. It's just whether you decide mm-hmm. to go with that.
Right, and that's always an aftermarket option
something
as well. You know, somebody can go down the road.
Go to those color DMD people,
exactly.
Or whatever.
Exactly.
Okay, that's great.
And it also come down to if you guys want to pay $8,000 for a game versus $8,400. But actually, it'll be more than that because we'll have to put the money into the R&D to get it to come in there. So it may actually increase. It may only be a difference of $50 to $150 in the display, but it might ultimately end up being a $500 to $750 mm-hmm. increase in the overall price of it. So mm-hmm. we've got to look at stuff like that.
Right.
A color display is great. If you see, I'm sure a lot of you have seen Wizard of Oz. That is a beautiful display up there. I love it. But what does it do for you as a player? It doesn't do a thing for you as a player, but it does do something for the people watching you play. It gives them a little bit of entertainment when the other guy's up there waylaying away on it. So a display is great when you're not playing the game, but when you're playing the game, I don't think it really makes a huge difference.
Okay. I've got time for one more question.
Well, the actual there's modes are sort of subjective what a mode is, but Python left us with seven ringmasters, so there's going to be seven modes based on those ringmasters. Obviously, Python loved the number seven, the lucky number. So if you look at that game, there are seven flippers. He wants seven ringmasters. He wants seven video modes. So we're doing things in increments of seven. So you could probably do some math and go seven times seven times seven, and if we throw another seven in there, we could get really complicated with the thing. We could turn it into another Lord of the Rings or something like that. But there is a point where you've gone too far into it. Personally, I like a moderate-level rule set, not something that is so complicated that it's going to take you 10 years to get there, or do like I do sometimes, pull the glass off and, I got it there. So, but there's something that I do want to back up a little bit and talk a little bit about Python, his final days. Good guy here. It's always difficult, but Python... He was not the easiest person to work with, and really, unfortunately, the last 4 months of his life, we were taking care of him more than working with him, but he continued to work and give us ideas up until the final days. There was one person that stayed with him the last 2 months of his life and lived with him and helped take care of him, and that's my son Leo. And I can say I've never been more proud. What Leo did in those 2 months is absolutely incredible. And we lost Python April 9th, 2014. And the day before he died, I was there. I don't know if I can get through that.
Hey, let's do you want to leave it there?
He called me to his bed. He had a bed set up in his living room. And right before I left, he called me over, and he said, sit down, he sent Wishes, who was the other health care provider that was there, the paid one. He sent Wishes out of the room and told him, I want a private moment with James. And he sits me down on the bed, and he says, you got to promise me something, James. And I said, what's that, Python? He says, you got to promise you're going to take care of the team. You're going to take care of the boys. And that was the team that he assembled. And so I said, I will. Python. No, I want to hear your words. I said, Python, I promise you I'll take care of the team. He goes, and promise me that game will get done. So that's the promise. So I promised him it'll get done.
Okay, Jimmy and James, thank you very much.
Thank you.